Missed an episode of your favorite podcast? Choose from over a decade of content in our archives. Not just the latest episode. All free at GCNlive.com.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
They say pop goes the weasel. What do you say about booms?
Lowering the boom.
Micah Hanks?
I guess you could say any number of things, by the way. But
well, what about the whales? We've had quite a number of whale beachings.
And this is a whale of a question, by the way.
Yeah. Thanks. Well,
yeah.
Anyway, you know, I've been kind of worried about the Pacific Ocean. I think the Fukushima radiation leakage into the Pacific is one of the most underreported stories of the last 100 years. I'm very concerned about the health and vibrancy of the Pacific Ocean as a result of trillions of hot particles being deposited into this wonderful ecosystem. But we've been seeing lately more and more whale beachings. Of course, they've always occurred from time to time. There have been theories about, you know, Navy sonar training exercises and war game simulations, that sort of thing, with very powerful sonars screwing up the whale's ability to communicate. They become disoriented. They live in a highly refined acoustic environment. But we've been seeing more and more beachings lately. And I think in one of your suggestions here at forum.theparacast.com, you're looking into the possibility that deep underwater earthquakes may somehow also be contributing to this problem.
There haven't been, as far as I know, any scientific determinations made that, you know, absolutely without question suggest a causal correlation between earthquake phenomena and whale beachings. But, again, what has been proposed at times is the notion that, and I want to be very clear in stating that because this is speculative, but the point here to be made is that in many instances preceding earthquakes, there have been circumstances where sometimes massive whale beachings, and also I think would have been everything from bottlenose dolphins to I think there's also what's known colloquially as the melon-headed dolphin that is a deeper ocean species. But there was an incident preceding one of the more tragic tsunamis that occurred in recent years off the coast of Japan that was preceded by a pretty massive beaching of dolphins along these lines. There was also, although it, thank God, didn't result in a tsunami, earlier this year there was a deep ocean earthquake that was reported off the coast of southeastern Japan, and that was preceded by a number of whale beachings, not only in Australia and also along southern Japan, I suppose, in the Ryukyus area, but also, I think, off the coast of California just as well. Marine biologists had noted that there was a greater incidence of whale beachings for this time of the year, and though in the past that there are certain migratory paths that certain species will follow, especially when they're, you know, headed north from Mexico and they head up toward Alaska and whatnot. So it's customary that certain times of the year during these migratory patterns that there are going to be some beachings. But I mean, we're talking about, I think, for where one or two would be expected this time of the year in any normal circumstance, we have something to the tune of 12 or 14, in which case we seem to be observing something that is greater than average. And so that's, I think, you know, fairly significant, especially when we do find that these beachings, maybe by a few weeks at a time, will tend to precede the earthquakes. And so I believe that someone had suggested a study be actually carried out to see if animals may be capable of detecting earthquakes. And, you know, again, a skeptical commentator that I read a lot of his work and actually like a lot of his work, Benjamin Radford, had tweeted saying, "Good luck proving that." And I'm thinking, I understand the skepticism, but again, I'm not just trying to attack skeptics, by the way, because note I mentioned a lot of them are my friends and I respect them. We stay in touch and we try and correspond and share good information with each other. But I think that, you know, we can be so skeptical sometimes. What if one day we do find that as a result of the directional orientation utilized by various forms of biology on planet Earth, when geophysical phenomena occurs, that directional sense, that honing ability is right, somewhat affected, and thus these animals get a little, I don't know what you say, disoriented, I guess, and then they become disoriented and bad things can tend to happen. We see it with birds, fish, whales, a variety of different animals. I don't think we have to be necessarily so skeptical that we rule out what appears to be statistically significant. But again, to underscore all that, I don't know that the science necessarily indicates that there is a connection, but it certainly seems to be the case that when these whale beaching occurs, they precede earthquake activity. I do think it's time we try to take seriously the notion that there may be a connection and try and apply some good science to that.
I totally agree. And also the huge ore fish, which are deep-dwelling fish that can grow up to 50 feet long. I mean, there's some fairly famous photographs online where I think it was one group of like 30 or 40 sailors are holding this gigantic ore fish. And they rarely surface, if ever. And there's, I guess, a Japanese legendary tradition that when ore fish are found on the beach, that's an indication that there are earthquakes, impending earthquakes ready to happen. We've had a couple of them off the California coast in the last, I don't know, I think 2 years, year and a half, possibly, of huge ore fish that are being beached. And there's been some in Japan. And, you know, if there's some wonderful sort of ancient insight into this particular portent, if you will, California may be in for the Haywood Fault, for instance, maybe letting loose, or possibly the Cascadia subduction zone or something.
Yeah.
God forbid that should happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll be honest, too, is, you know, studying the possible seismic connections and whatnot in relation to these mystery boom reports is kind of what got me interested. Because I was spending a lot of time at the website of the U.S. Geological Service or Survey. And, of course, I've always followed USGS reports because the earliest report, this is a subject near and dear to my heart, the Brown Mountain Lights, the earliest scientific report that sought to explain what the cause of the lights were was George Mansfield's report that was published in a USGS circular that sought to explain the lights based on the occurrence of, or rather, I guess, the appearance of railroads in the region. That doesn't meet all the criteria for explaining the lights because I happen to have at least a few good photographs that depict anomalous aerial illuminations occurring at night, which are well above the ridge line and hence would not, to me, I guess we could look at what Orion, the group of amateur scientists, some of them actually, they called themselves amateur scientists, but many of them were engineers and scientists working at Oak Ridge National Labs. But the Orion group back in the 70s, one of the guys whom I actually spoke with, they did notice that they could, you know, fire like a 1,000 candle light above the ridge, and on the opposite side it would appear as though a red globe were hovering over a ridgeline. So refractions of ground-based lights could account for some of the reports of lights seen in the Limbel Gorge, but, you know, I think that natural plasmas and things akin to earth lights, earthquake lights, or ball lightning seems like a more plausible scenario based on the observations and some of the photos I've seen. But nonetheless, you know, when you spend a lot of time looking at geological data, you do come across interpretations of some of these anomalous phenomena, which is, I think, kind of what led me to looking at the earthquake connection with the whales as well. So it's funny how all this stuff's kind of interrelated at times. But again, I find more and more that you'll find so much good fodder for study of anomalies in good scientific literature, but most people don't go looking for that, and hence they don't even know that it exists, which brings us, of course.
Yeah, you have to wade through the non-entertainment to get to to get to the point. You know, if it's not entertaining most people, I think, in general, you know, their eyes glaze over and they kind of like, you know, click for the next page or whatever.
Which is why you and Gene and I don't get asked to be on more of these TV shows. See?
Actually, I got close to being asked on one TV show, and they filmed me asking questions of one of the hosts of that show. But it never aired that I know about. If it did, tell me, folks. You know, it was actually an episode of the UFO Hunters, and Bill Burns, one of the roving hosts or narrators or something, had come to Phoenix. And I think they were doing a Phoenix Lights episode. But it turned out I wasn't the best person to ask about Phoenix Lights. I never saw the Phoenix Lights. When the Phoenix Lights occurred, I was busy at home watching TV that evening, about something totally unrelated.
I was watching the NCAA finals, the basketball finals.
You see, the lights didn't like us. That's it. The force behind the lights did not make a single effort to go ahead and alert us that something weird was going on. Because if they did, you know, Chris and I, separately, wherever we were at the time, would have gone out and taken a look at things.
I was in Casa Grande. They flew right over my motel.
And they waved at you, Chris. Didn't you see that? Listen, we've got Micah Hanks of the Graylian Report. If you go to graylianreport.com, just like it sounds, you'll check out his site and his material. With Gene and Chris, you're in
the Paracast.
Neighbors, are you tired of dealing with a slow web hosting provider? Well, check out A2 Hosting and their screaming fast Swift server platform. They even have SSDs that load pages 300% faster than the competition. Ready to give your site a speed boost? Well, tell you what, neighbors, head on over to a2hosting.com. That's A2, that's number 2, a2hosting.com. Check out their Prime Hosting account. And get this, neighbors, they're even giving you an exclusive 25% off discount for all our listeners. 25%. And remember, their Guru Crew support team is standing by 24/7, 365 days a year to answer any of your questions. Now, to get the discount, use the coupon code GENE when you check out.
Friends, this is Alex Jones for MidasResources.com. For more than 15 years, I have exclusively used Midas Resources for all my precious metal needs. Whether it's bullion or collectibles you're looking for, Midas Resources is simply the best. I own my gold as a hedge against inflation. This Federal Reserve fiat currency could go the way of the Deutschmark and the Weimar Republic anytime. In these historically dangerous times, it makes sense to physically hold gold and silver. Midas already has some of the best deals in the industry. But if you give them a call and mention the radio special, they will give you a list of the day's super specials. Midas brokers are standing by to answer all your questions at 800-686-2237. They also have a lot of informative free literature explaining the opportunities and risk of holding precious metals. They are ready to answer your questions at 800-686-2237. Again, that's 800-686-2237.
Would you like to use your IRA funds to buy precious metals and hold them at home? Are you wary of the stock market, paper gold, or faraway depositories? With a checkbook IRA, you may legally take custody of IRA-owned gold and silver. Visit CheckbookIRA.com and learn how IRA owners in all 50 states have already taken control. CheckbookIRA.com. CheckbookIRA.com.
Hi, this is Walt Augustinowicz. I'm the founder and CEO of ID Stronghold. By now you've heard our commercials about wallets that protect you from electronic pickpocketing. 10 years ago, I created a way to protect my own cards from prying eyes after government officials started talking about issuing a national ID card with a built-in radio chip called RFID. I felt having to broadcast my personal information was an invasion of privacy. Soon after, it was also announced that credit cards, debit cards, U.S. passports, hotel room keys, and even transit passes would all soon incorporate RFID. It was then I formed ID Stronghold to share my inventions in blocking RFID signals with the world. There are a lot of misconceptions out there today about RFID. I encourage everyone to get informed and get protected. Please go to IDStronghold.com and get the facts and the wallet, sleeves, or badge holders you need to protect your personal financial data. You'll be pleasantly surprised that through our direct sales model, you won't pay more than other comparable unprotected wallets. It is as though the protection is free. Visit IDStronghold.com today.
My name's Clyde, age 59, and I reside in Florence, South Carolina. The doctors diagnosed me as having clogged arteries. Felt like I was carrying heavy concrete blocks around my feet and legs. I started taking Heart and Body Extract as directed. It is less than 3 weeks, and I'm like a young man again. It's unbelievable that an herbal formula can work so fast and so powerfully.
Learn the secrets of an effective, natural, 100% organic nutritional supplement for a healthy heart and circulation at HBExtract.com.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
Chris is sounding disgusted that he couldn't see the Phoenix Lights. Do you hear that tone in his voice?
Oh, yeah. Well, one thing we should say about Phoenix Lights, if you guys want to bring that up, is that again, some of the reports seem to indicate that there was a large triangular-shaped aircraft, yet again, that was being observed, much like what was reported over Stephenville years ago, much like what was reported of Illinois in the incident that we discussed with regard to the police officers back in 2001. And again, somebody I like and I correspond with from time to time, and he's been a guest on this program, and we asked some hard questions of Robert Schaefer. When he was on this program with you guys, he had said that the Phoenix Lights, without question, can be easily explained. I kind of go back and forth on that point, that the whole thing can just be very easily explained. I mean, you guys feel that the Phoenix Lights is something that's purely explainable and that there's nothing to it, or were there actually some objects being seen? I know Peter Davenport seems to think that there were.
At least personally, I do. And the event occurred about 45 minutes to an hour before the famous footage of the newscasters standing in front of the Australian Mountains saying, "Oh, yeah, behind me, this huge ship." And what are obvious to me to be flares are the famous image that everybody has of the Phoenix Lights incident. However, the real event happened 45 minutes before those flares were ever sent up there by Luke Air Force Base or whomever.
Right, yeah. And I don't doubt that possibly flares may be involved in some way, but again, there were some reports. Again, you know, Flash Symington, you know, even saying, look, there was a great big triangular-shaped object that passed over me and that he had seen this thing just as well. And correct me if I'm wrong, that is what he said, right? I'm not confabulating. He did describe a triangular-shaped, roughly triangular or chevron-shaped sort of an object, very large, that he observed himself.
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah. So, you know, and by the way, I don't want to – Bob Schaefer, I have a lot of respect for him. We don't always agree on things, but, you know, that was one of my favorite episodes of this show was when he was on. And again, we have a lot of common ground, like he pointed out on that episode where I had said I didn't like Philip Klass saying UFOs can be explained as ball lightning. In other words, you know, presenting another little known or little understood phenomena in exchange for another, to which Schaefer said, absolutely, I agree with Micah. So, you know, of my skeptical brethren, I say sometimes we have to kind of butt heads from time to time in order to find the common ground so that we can make more plausible and rational determinations about what we're looking at. So I just wanted to throw that in there.
Well, I encountered Bob at the back of the room and at the UFO Congress, and he was snoring rather loudly during Stanton Friedman's presentation, and I think it was Mark Pilkington, and I went over and nudged him and said, "Hey, are you taking notes?" And he pretended like he hadn't been asleep. Oh yeah, I'm listening now. I had a little laugh at his expense.
I got to tell you, I noticed the same thing once at the Paradigm Symposium, that there was a lecture being given, and P.Z. Myers had been there that year. You were there, Chris. And there's P.Z. Myers sitting there asleep in the audience. So I went over and offered him a drink. I said, "Can I get you anything, P.Z.?" And he went back to snoring. So
I have gone to some of these lectures where I would have preferred to have been able to go to sleep if I could.
Yeah, I agree.
That's most lectures, except for Micah and Nick's. I was like listening to those guys.
Let me ask you a quick question here. Since we're talking about the whales and we're talking about the mystery booms, now we think, of course, about phenomena that was reported decades ago. But current episodes of anything, what can you trace to so-called climate change?
That's an interesting one. On the Mystery Booms website, I actually feature a series of, on the right-hand column, a series of frequently asked questions. And one of those is, are the mystery booms a result of climate change? Because this is something that, I'm not a climate denier. I've been called that by a lot of people because I've cited, you know, studies that seek to try and account for things like what has been called climate hiatus and whatnot. And I think that there are obviously a variety of different interpretations and also a lot of good data that helps us understand why there are variances, and hence the term climate change and not global warming as it once was espoused to be. But although generally the trends are toward heating, and this is what science tells us, but many people, as a result of, I think, kind of less a scientific attitude toward the subject and more an advocacy for change in relation to it, have tried to say, oh, these mystery booms, climate change. And I have to tell you, once again, it's easy to just kind of grab onto a hot button subject and say, yeah, see, we've got all kinds of stuff. All hell's breaking loose all over planet Earth. It's got to be the fact that we've got anthropogenic global warming occurring. According to the USGS website and other scientific institutions that I have gone and asked this question of, none seem to indicate that warming trends or other climate change occurring on planet Earth is in any way correlative in relation to the mystery booms or other anomalous noises in nature. So I actually addressed that at the website, and at least as far as that subject goes, I can't tell you that climate change is the cause.
We were mentioning earlier in the show the difficulty in being able to recall events that happened years and years ago, even yesterday. I mean, if you look at the TV talking heads, they could be discussing the very same event and you get totally different versions, and this is from supposedly trained reporters. But say we're going back to the 1890s and the legend of the airships. Is there anything new there, Micah Hanks, that we could talk about?
I actually think that there is, and I'll tell you why. It was long supposed, Jerry Clark and a lot of the great Fortean were, I guess, he wasn't just one who cataloged. He was truly a chronicler and also a person who offered a lot of his own interpretations of things. But throughout the years, guys like Jerry and a number of other authors have looked at the old newspaper reports, you know, obtained through microfilms and whatnot, because as is evidenced by a rash of reports that occurred between 1896 and 1897, it appears that there were newspaper reports that indicated observations of mystery airships over parts of California and other parts of the United States. And actually, they weren't just reported in the United States. There were reports that occurred in parts of South America and Canada just as well. Walter Bosley brought to my attention a report from South America. Richard Dolan also brought me just an incredible report from Canada from the 19th century that appeared to describe in truest sense, an airship of some kind that was observed in a very strange, under strange circumstances. It was in a wilderness area, the last kind of a place that you'd expect something like this to be seen. And I think that Richard found that in the Canadian National Archives.
In New Zealand in 1909.
New Zealand, exactly. There were a lot of reports. I think there was an Australian wave that Andrew Nicholson had brought to my attention, which I mentioned in my book, The UFO Singularity. A lot of people, by the way, didn't understand why, if I'm talking about technological trends moving toward the future in relation to UFOs, as I did in that book, why I would tie in airships. And I'll get to that in a moment, because I think there's a very clear connection. But, Gene, you ask if there's anything new. We look at all the different parts of the world in which there were reports of airships. And back in the day, I think that Fortean scholars were cataloging this information and chronicling the data. But the skeptical interpretation had been that, well, these were probably hoaxes, because we know that hoaxes appeared in newspapers. In fact, Mark Twain had actually authored a few of them himself. And one of the reasons that journalists would do this was not just because news was slow one day and so they wanted to pull a joke on the readership, but also sometimes they were meant to affect political change, like California companies cooking their books and whatnot and engaging in nefarious activity. And hence, these hoaxes would be steered at trying to make these companies, give them the mistaken impression that their nefarious actions had led investors to do things crazy like committing suicide and whatnot. There were a number of reasons why hoaxes appeared, but I started wondering, is it really fair to say that all the reports of airships, any mention of airships in the 1890s, were hoaxes? So this led me to the natural question, why were they perceived as being such? And the general reason is that, according to aviation historians, the technology did not exist in the 1890s to build such airships.
Let's do our break and then get back to the airships of the 1890s with Micah Hanks, who was not there, despite what some people think. With Gene and Chris, you're in
the Paracast.
A little right, a little left, but always independent-minded. The Genesis Communications Network, GCN.
There are hundreds of silver products on the market today, but there's nothing like the astonishing health benefits of the multi-patented One Silver Solution. Boost your immune system at a great price with our Silver Solution Liquid, starting at $12.95 a bottle. Now available in regular and extra strength. That's half the price of the leading competitors. Call 844-USILVER for your free catalog, or go to onesilversolution.com. Onesilversolution.com. There is only one Silver Solution.
Everyone says or does something silly once in a while, but once that embarrassing thing is on the internet, it can spread like a terrible rash. Put it to rest. Get a free expert analysis today from Reputation.com. It only takes 30 seconds. 800-831-0771. We protect your online image by helping to make sure that when people search for you or your business, they find the most current, accurate information possible. Reputation.com. Because word travels fast. Call for a free analysis today. 800-831-0771. That's 800-831-0771.
Hi, Peter Vaccaro for ParanormalDate.com. Are you looking for love in all the wrong places? Now you have a chance to change that by signing up for free at ParanormalDate.com. This incredible dating site puts people of like minds together. People who are interested in the strange, the unusual, mysteries, ghosts, UFOs, and the afterlife, and so much more. ParanormalDate.com was developed for you, people seeking a viable alternative to the other dating services. You can join for free by going to ParanormalDate.com, and if you decide you like it and want to connect with people, use the code GEORGE for a substantial discount. Mark Rawlings, president of ParanormalDate.com, says so many people hunger to share their experiences about the paranormal, the unexplainable, or the afterlife, and so much more, and this is the source for them to meet and share that common interest. So sign up for free at ParanormalDate.com. ParanormalDate.com. And use the code GEORGE if you decide to connect with someone you like.
If you owe $10,000 or more to the IRS or state in back taxes, you know they'll never stop coming after you. With bank levies, wage garnishments, they'll even seize your home or business. The good news? A government program for tax debt forgiveness. It's called the Fresh Start Initiative.
I'm Paul Sibley with U.S. Tax Shield. We can help navigate the new laws, get you protected, and resolve your tax issues permanently.
Call the experts at U.S. Tax Shield now for your free consultation and get a guaranteed quote to resolve your case. Call 800-436-6451. That's 800-436-6451.
Okay, honey, I have to ask, and be honest here. Have you been taking a little blue pill? Because things have been pretty good in the bedroom lately.
No, I swear.
You didn't pick anything up at the Pharmacia last month in Cancun?
No.
Well, something's different.
I have been taking that heart and body extract you bought me.
But that's for your heart and to control your cholesterol.
Well, I read HB extract also promotes healthy prostate function.
I never guessed it would work this well, but...
But you're glad it did.
Oh, yeah.
Heart and body extract is a 100% organic formula that promotes a strong heart, healthy arterial flow, better circulation, improves erectile and prostate gland function, and provides youthful energy, strength, and stamina. Find out more at heartandbodyextract.com. Heart and Body Extract paired with healthy heart choices is a winning combination. Call toll-free to order or for free information. 1-866-295-5305. 1-866-295-5305.
We've been patiently waiting. Waiting while you tried to ignore us. Waiting while you acted like we didn't exist. Waiting for our chance to be taken seriously. The wait is over. GCN is available 24/7 at GCNlive.com. Navigate through news from your favorite host and download archives of past shows. Download the app on your smartphone or tablet or visit GCNlive.com for instant access and live streaming. GCNlive.com. The future of talk radio. Now at your fingertips.
Hi, this is Tracy Torme, screenwriter-producer. You're listening to Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
Of course, some people think I was there in the 1890s, or I'm not too far removed from the 1890s, and that is just not true. There was no photograph in the closet getting old as I get younger. Micah Hanks, back to the 1890s. What's going on?
First of all, I actually was there, being the time traveler that I am. But traveling back in time here for the purpose of the conversation, again, it was often a preconception, as we said before the break, that the technology just didn't exist by the 1890s to build any kind of an airship on par with what we saw in the reports. And maybe to an extent that's true, but I certainly want to be very clear that there were a lot of airships being built. Although the more widely discussed inventors of airships are those who were in Europe who were building them, as recently as the 1870s. I want to point out that as far back as 1847, Solomon Andrews here in the United States had proposed an aircraft, which he wasn't successful gaining financial support for the construction of this, but he revisited the idea again in the 1860s. And this actually, excerpt that I'm about to share with you comes from the Smithsonian National Portrait Gallery News, which states as follows. While serving with the Union Army in 1862, Solomon Andrews became convinced that a navigable, lighter-than-air craft would prove vastly superior to the tethered balloons that were used for military reconnaissance. So he resigned his commission and, at his own expense, began constructing the world's first self-propelled steerable airship. This is 1862. And comprising the three cigar-shaped balloons, a rudder, and an operator's car equipped with movable weights, the Ariane, as it was called, made its maiden flight on June 1st, 1863. The Union Army, I want to point out, even President Lincoln had observed this craft, but they decided not to go with it. Later, he tried to revisit the idea for commercial purposes and institute a series of airships that would carry passengers commercially between New York and Pennsylvania. That idea didn't get off the ground, but at very least, there were airships that were built. And I found actually that there was a report that appeared, I believe that the article was in, let's see, I can get that information, but oh, here it was. It was the San Francisco Gate that reported on what were called the now obscure history of the Wright Brothers Aviation Experimentation, where a number of inventors in the 1890s had been working on airships in California. Now, what's interesting
Aero
about...
Aero Club.
We can talk about the Sonora Aero Club here in a moment, because that, if there's any credibility to it, actually predated what the California inventors in the 1890s on record were building. But the question is again, if this information is now coming to light that there were a lot of inventors who were working on these kind of craft, and there's an article at MicahHanks.com, if people want to go read it, it's called Airships of the 1800s, An Odd History of Aerial Phenomena. It goes over a lot of this. But again, the question is, if there were a lot of inventors, and they had actually, however crude they may have been, but they were getting airships of their own design and often on their own dollar up into the air and demonstrating these things as being steerable and navigable, then why has there been this idea that the aircraft couldn't have existed, that the technology didn't exist, and that the airship stories in the newspapers were hoaxes? Well, here's the reason why. In truth, a lot of these stories, like at one time Nikola Tesla and many of his inventions prior to the Internet era had done, they kind of fall into obscurity. Because, again, those who succeed, you know, the Edisons in history are the ones whose technology, of course, you know, leaves that lasting imprint on history and whatnot. And at times we've had to, I think many would agree, especially in terms of the history of engineering and invention, we've had to rewrite and reconceive some of our ideas about the origins of some of these technologies. And hence, in recent years, Tesla and others have been given their due and proper. But the point is that there were a lot of obscure builders of these airships that probably were not well reported, and the information about them was not easily accessible prior to the Internet era. The ideas, the misconceptions that there were no such craft and thus that no such technology existed spilled over from the pre-Internet era into the modern day, and skeptical commentators have continued to say that these are all probably just hoaxes, which brings us to those reports from 1896 and 97 over San Francisco. This seems to have been a much more fantastic aircraft that was designed, and that's part of the reason, I think, also for the skepticism. But I became aware by searching through microfilm data myself, and a lot of this available online now rather than having to go to a library, I found reports from the San Francisco Bee from February of 1896 that were describing an aircraft that was slated for design and construction by a man named Charles Abbott Smith, some brilliant inventor in the San Francisco area. And the story at that time in February was that not only had there been a company that was hoping to fund this project, but that there may be a possibility that the military would match the project or match those funds and help get this thing off the ground, and hence that the military had interest in building these airships just as well. Charles Abbott Smith files for a patent for this aircraft, so you can see drawings, sketches of what it looked like, that actually appeared in the San Francisco Bee, but that later appeared with the patent that was filed in April, I believe, of that year. And then, of course, in November of that same year, then we have reports of this massive airship seen over San Francisco. What's interesting is that I could never find any evidence that Smith's aircraft had ever been built, and I in likelihood thought that it probably hadn't been. But I did come across an interesting book written by Timothy C. Parrott called The Secret Life of Dr. Charles Abbott Smith, San Francisco's 19th Century Airship Inventor. And I note in the article at my website that I just mentioned that it's a very obscure book. I didn't know if it was even still in print. I couldn't find anywhere to buy it online at all. And so I said, I want to try and track this book down and talk to the author. Lo and behold, I get an email from him 2 days ago, and he says, I've got copies and I'm going to mail you one right now. And he says, yes, according to the data that I did at the request of family members of Smith, I do believe not only that I've unraveled a lot about this man's obscure history, but that there was a working prototype built and that it got off the ground. Now, I haven't got the book yet. It's on its way, so this is really just developing as I'm here on the show with you guys. But, I mean, it's going to be fascinating if, rather than UFOs and rather than newspaper hoaxes, I guess either extreme of the argument, it's going to be fascinating if we find that just another obscure portion of history that involves brilliant inventors, but that for various reasons didn't make it into the history books, actually comes to constitute a real history of airships over Southern California in the 1890s. And it's looking more and more like that is indeed going to be the case.
You also have to think here, if people in scattered parts of the world invented things, and maybe they didn't go much farther than local testing, since there was very little communication back and forth as we have today, those inventions could have died on the vine if they ran out of funding or had a crash or something like that.
Certainly. And again, there's another point that should be made. I mentioned Walter Bosley, and he's written a great series of books called The Empire of the Wheel. And he'll tell you, they're largely speculative, and there is a lot of speculation in there, although I think that it's in many instances very well reasoned. I like Walter's writing. I try to gravitate a little bit more toward what factual data we can find, and sometimes it takes years just to be able to uncover that. In the second book in Wall Street series, he addresses the idea that our Sonora Aero Club and this Charles A. Dulleschal, not to be confused with Charles A. Smith. It's interesting some of the synchronicities in terms of names that pop up. But, you know, there was this story that years ago that this artist, Charles Dulleschal's notebooks were discovered in a thrift shop. And what they seemed to, this story's pretty well known, but what they seemed to document was this role that Dulleschal played as the draftsman for this secret group called the Sonora Aero Club that was operated or controlled or overseen by a broader organization called NIMSA, some sort of an acronym. I think some people considered that to mean the New York Mechanical Zephyr Association. Walter takes a different interpretation and links it to possible backing by a German organization, which in his interpretation led to the institution of airships being built in the United States as a part of a secret German operation. And the reason that the aircraft were kept secret, as would be indicated in Dulleschal's writings about this, if they're to be believed as being something as a representative of factual and actual events that occurred, the reason for the secrecy had been because the airships were being used, and obviously in outside, you know, Germany, and hence that presents international issues, but for purposes of actually gaining access to parts of South America because they were actually hunting gold. So it's a very interesting scenario. What can be made of these reports? Just because I've managed to uncover a lot of factual data about inventors who were using aviation technologies, although obscure technologies at that time, as far back as maybe the 1840s, 50s, and 60s in America, that doesn't necessarily substantiate the claims of the Sonora Aero Club, but it definitely makes me look at it a little differently. Right. Because, again, I think a lot of people just aren't up to speed on the obscure history of aviation occurring in the United States during that period. So it's maybe not that far out that there were people building aircraft and that they had more clandestine operations for secretive purposes that maybe involved financial gain and also involved foreign powers. We just don't know. But what's interesting and why I tie it in with the UFO singularity in my book is, as Richard Dolan has discussed this idea of a breakaway civilization, we do start seeing the underpinnings of the ideas that there could be advanced technologies that, as far back as the 1850s maybe, have been utilized for purposes that do not meet the standards or the same goals of, you know, humanity on the whole.
And you know what? Before we go on, yeah. I'm thinking of the TV show Wild Wild West. Mm. Just when you talk about this crazy inventions in the 19th century, Micah Hanks, Gene and Chris, you're in
the Paracast.
Independently leading the way for the nation. Compelling talk for every political persuasion. We are GCN.
Graphic Converter is the image manipulation tool for the rest of us. It does not use any database. You get full control of all your files. Want to view the images of a folder? Drag it into Graphic Converter and a powerful browser opens up to show your image files. You could use it for slideshows. You could use it to import images from digital cameras or from scanners. Need to do some image editing? You can do that too in Graphic Converter. Also print catalogs. Convert from so many formats I can't even list them. Download now to see if Graphic Converter is good for you, like 1.5 million other users. Guess what? You could save money when you buy Graphic Converter. Use the coupon code NIGHTOWL. Use the coupon code NIGHTOWL to get a special price for Graphic Converter. Go to LemkeSoft.com. That's LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com.
We the people grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit, then carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Hi, Ted Anderson. I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.
Virtually anyone can hack your cell phone and track your calls, your texts, your emails, your every movement, but only if they can detect a signal. Stay one step ahead of hackers and Big Brother with a Blockit Pocket, a custom-made pocket infused with pure silver that creates a complete Faraday enclosure for your cell phone. For free shipping to the Lower 48, visit BlockitPocket.com or call 888-315-9618. BlockitPocket.com, enhancing health and privacy.
We've been patiently waiting. Waiting while you tried to ignore us. Waiting while you acted like we didn't exist. Waiting for our chance to be taken seriously. The wait is over. GCN is available 24/7 at GCNlive.com. Navigate through news from your favorite host and download archives of past shows. Download the app on your smartphone or tab or visit GCNlive.com for instant access and live streaming. GCNlive.com. The future of talk radio. Now at your fingertips.
We the People grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit and carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Hi, Ted Anderson. On placing a silver dollar in a book explains our monetary system. Call for your copy at 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.
Are you tired of commuting to a job that makes someone else rich, working harder than ever, but getting nowhere? Do you hate spending hundreds of dollars every week on daycare, having someone else raise your children? With our opportunities, you can start earning money as soon as next week. You get to be the boss, work from home, and live a happier life. At Be The Boss Network, you'll find hundreds of work-from-home opportunities that you can literally start today and be earning money as soon as next week. Go to freedom106.com and start earning money as soon as next week. You get to be the boss. Get out of the rat race. Work from home. Go to freedom106.com right now and change your life today. That's freedom, the number 106.com. Go to freedom106.com and start earning money as soon as next week. You be the boss. Go to freedom106.com.
Hi, this is nuclear physicist lecturer Stanton Friedman. You are listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
So I was thinking again more about the TV show Wild Wild West than the movie with Will Smith, because it was such a bad movie, even though it was directed by the same guy who brought you Men in Black, Barry Sonnenfeld. Anyway, we have Micah Hanks with Gene and Chris. We're going back through time, looking at the inventions of the 19th century that may, you know, have either vanished with time or took on a life of their own. Then you brought up Richard Dolan and the theory of the breakaway civilization.
Yeah, and, you know, again, that's something that really put Rich on my radar, was the idea that, okay, rather than aliens, could there be an element of humanity that's utilizing incredible technology for purpose of something that is exterior to, or peripheral at very least, to the common goals of humanity as we know it. And what's really interesting is that I think Walter Bosley, Joseph Farrell, and others have kind of seen that same parallel. And what's fascinating to me is when I read Farrell's books, or if I read what Walter says, or I read what Richard says, I find that we all kind of, from our different interests and areas of interest in relation to mystery aviation technologies, we all tend to start kind of coming to similar sort of conclusions about what may be happening behind the scenes, which led Richard to, I believe he coined the term, breakaway civilization. So that's where I get into airships in the book, The UFO Singularity. A lot of people, they didn't understand why I was tying that in with technology, but you got to take into consideration that, you know, a singularity is, at least in terms of technological singularity, is describing generally the advent of artificial intelligence, but that, of course, is going to be preceded by an intelligence or a technology explosion. And it's possible, at very least, that if there are individuals and organizations that have utilized highly advanced technology behind the scenes over the years, that some of the UFO phenomena could be explained in terms of organizations that are running counter to the conventional notions of how physics, electromagnetism, and engineering work, and have utilized this for purpose of designing these aircraft. The question, of course, is, which maybe is less interesting than trying to verify the existence of the craft themselves, but the question is, what purpose do those craft serve, and who controls them? So, you know, these are interesting questions, and as far as a breakaway civilization goes, it certainly led me kind of into that realm of thought, which I think that Farrell, Bosley, and Dolan and I all kind of share. So it'd be interesting if we all got together and compared notes sometime about that, but that's not strictly relevant. So that's
sounds like a great roundtable.
It would be interesting, wouldn't it?
A breakaway civilization roundtable. There you go. But even then, you talk about breakaway civilizations, just considering whether our own scientists working under cover of the military using black budget money. Whether they've developed all sorts of things, aircraft and other inventions that are far in excess of what we're doing now. I mean, we're doing some pretty amazing things.
Yeah, we certainly are.
Oh, you know, we're primitive in certain ways, and you wonder what's being done by scientists. And, of course, that goes back to even UFOs, whether some degree of UFOs are basically secret aircraft of some kind. Speaking of the opinions, there were theories about that. Dr. Leon Davidson, I don't know if you ever heard of him, some kind of person with government connections, and he brought out a civilian version of Project Blue Book Special Report Number 14 back in the 1960s. And he had a theory about Earth-based UFOs. A lot of the UFOs we saw were really some sort of Earth-based craft. And then you add to that the imperfection of human perception and recollections of strange things, and you confabulate a few extra elements of the performance of those aircraft, and there you go.
Yeah, there's some interesting determinations made along those lines. And I want to point out something, too, about one of those. In relation to the mystery aircraft and the descriptions of many of them as being cigar-shaped, again, some of these aspects tend to kind of run parallel to some of the airship designs from the 1890s, although presumably what would have been built in the 1890s would be far more crude and recognizable as being dirigible-like than the kind of things that we see reported, especially by the late 1940s. And we look at, for instance, the Chiles and Whitted encounter, which J. Allen Hynek at that time had said was in likelihood a meteor that the men had seen. I always thought that that was a bit strange, and there have been commentators who have noted that there appears to be, you know, some discrepancies between Hynek's interpretation and subsequent determinations that that may have been a physical craft as proposed by Jacques Vallée and others. But again, I think that we have to look at that incident and think about a couple of things. The pilots and with the incident in question observed that craft. I think that something similar had been seen only days beforehand over France. We go back to, I believe it was July or August of 1947 when Jack Puckett, again, who was with Strategic Air Command en route to MacDill Air Force Base in Florida, observed almost the exact same thing and said it nearly collided with his aircraft, and he estimated it was moving at nearly 1,000 miles an hour, almost the same aircraft. And I think that when people say, well, Hynek determined that that was a meteor, well, it very well may have been a meteor, but a similar aircraft was being seen elsewhere in the world and, you know, in other reports that predated the Chiles and Whitted observation. And also, at that time, when he was science advisor to Blue Book, Hynek was an individual who was trying to bring a scientific and skeptical interpretation of the UFO phenomena to the Air Force, and this was, of course, his stated mission objective. But as we all know, later over the years, he began to look at the wealth of data before him and said, you know, I don't know that really swamp gas, a term that is, you know, of course, many don't realize this, but it's also attributable to Hynek. He definitely softened his opinions and said, look, I don't think that we can be so skeptical that we can rule out all these reports. And so in terms of Hynek and Vallée and different interpretations of what Chiles and Whitted may have observed being in contrast to one another, I think that what we see instead is the evolution of Hynek's ideas about what UFOs may be. He may have maintained throughout his life that that one had been a meteor, but I find that the description of what the two pilots saw in that case was very similar to other reports of UFOs, some of which I talk about in my book, The Ghost Rockets.
Let me go back in time very quickly here, because we want to get to ghost rockets, but I have a feeling it's going to have to carry over to this week's episode of After the Paracast. And that is with Hynek. I had, I think, lunch with him or a meeting with him ahead of an interview. This is back, obviously, in the 1970s. And I had the distinct feeling then that his point of view about UFOs was moving into the so-called 3.5 to 4D possibilities. He was opening his mind to lots of different possibilities. Unfortunately, he didn't survive long enough to really explore them. But he was a really sensible guy, and it was kind of unfortunate that, you know, he was not a young man, that he didn't hang on
for
a while.
Well, for years, Vallée had been kind of whispering in his ear, and I think it finally took hold at one point.
Right. He was definitely listening. So, yeah, I appreciate that. I talked to him about a few of my ideas at the time. Unfortunately, this interview does not survive. I recorded it on a regular cassette tape, which I carried with me everywhere. It was one I acquired at a radio station I was working at. This is, like I said, going back to the mid to late 1970s. And I interviewed a number of people like that. I interviewed Major Donald Kehoe and others. The Kehoe interview was, by the way, published in one of those tabloid newspapers, but it went out of business before I ever got paid for it. If I can find the text, I'll post it. We wanted to talk about ghost rockets, and specifically the theory from James Carrion about the Rosetta Deception. And we have no more time. We have questions from our listeners. No more time. As you know, Micah, we have a second radio show called After the Paracast, which is available to subscribers of the Paracast Plus. Can we persuade you, please, to join us?
I believe I will be around on the date in question, so yes, that would be wonderful. And I definitely want to talk about James Carrion's interpretation. I don't really think it's that different from mine in truth. I think a few people, after hearing him on your show, have thought and felt that way. I don't find all that much of a difference, but it's going to be something we've got to dig into. So yeah, I'd love to join you.
Okay, so let me tell you about that in a moment, about how to join the Paracast Plus. But first, Micah Hanks, where can they find more of your stuff?
Well, of course, www.micahhanks.com, that's my name, and then also graylianreport.com are my two primary websites. At the Graylian Report, you're going to find podcasts. At my website, you're going to find everything from information about me and books I've written to blog posts that I write about this and that, whatever interests me.
All right. You can find us on Twitter, by the way. We don't mention it very often, but if you look for the Paracast on Twitter, there we are. We've got a total of two official Paracast fan clubs on Facebook. And don't ask me to merge them. It's never going to happen. And what do I mean now by After the Paracast? Well, After the Paracast is our commercial-free radio show. It's a commercial-free radio show offered exclusively to members of the Paracast Plus. And you also get the ad-free version of this show. If you want to know more about it, here's what you do. You go to plus.theparacast.com, plus.theparacast.com. And you learn how to sign up and about the low price. We have a one-year subscription, five-year subscription. If you want to really just kind of keep the expenses down, you can subscribe month by month. It'll be taken out of your PayPal account. We also give you a free copy of Chris O'Brien's Stalking the Tricksters if you sign up. And this weekend on After the Paracast, Chris and I will be joined by Micah Hanks, where we continue this discussion, plus.theparacast.com, plus.theparacast.com. Micah Hanks, thank you for joining us on the Paracast.
It's been my pleasure, guys.
The Paracast, featuring Gene Steinberg and Christopher O'Brien, is a copyrighted presentation of Making the Impossible, Incorporated. Tune in next week for a new adventure in the Paracast.
The nation's largest independently owned and operated talk radio network. The Genesis Communications Network. GCN.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
As if chlorine in our water weren't bad enough, now they're adding ammonia?
It's true. Some municipalities are now adding ammonia plus chlorine to your water supply. It's a disinfectant called chloramine. But with a trusted Big Berkey water filter, you can keep chloramine out of your water. New NSF EPA certified lab tests show EPA Berkey water filters remove chloramines, pharmaceuticals, BPA, pesticides, bacteria and viruses, all forms of fluoride, and much more. Big Berkey water filters are the original and most trusted on the market. The gold standard in water purification. And our filters last for years at less than 2 cents per gallon. Big Berkey, the one that's powerful enough to purify stagnant pond water. Get your Big Berkey today. Call 1-877-99-BERKEY or click BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. That's 1-877-99-BERKEY. Big Berkey Water Filters, for the love of clean water.